Hey, folks. This week on the podcast, American folk artist and musician Jamie Drake joins us to talk about the significant moments that have led to the makings of each of her album projects. She shares about the trials of releasing a debut album, experimenting to find her true voice as an artist, and much more. Her new album, New Girl, is out now on all platforms. I hope you enjoy. You have no idea how much this means to me. You are one of my recent favorite musicians. I discovered your work in 2020. I think it was through Andy Pizza's podcast.
Yeah.
And I think him taking time to feature your music throughout the podcast made me curious enough to want to dig into who this person was behind the beautiful music.
That was such a beautiful experience.
Oh my God.
Talking with him. Yeah. And it was like a 2-hour.
It was like an unveiling of your full life.
I know. It was such a journey. I remember listening back to it like 6 months later or maybe even a year later. And I was like, holy cow, that was really cool.
It was a deep dive. I love that he really digs into his guests. I haven't listened to his podcast in a while, but he does such a great job in bringing out a lot of gems in his guests. But I love that you mentioned intuition as kind of like the jumping off point for this conversation, or maybe the anchoring point to kind of use as a source for this conversation. And I thought it would be great to sort of dig into each one of your records and sort of combing into your mind state at that time period when you were creating that work. And I kind of used three different brackets to kind of like see if we can talk about your emotional state during the making of, I think your first record was When I Was Yours.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So heard it?
I haven't heard it. I tried to listen to it, but I couldn't find it on Spotify. Yeah. So, is that on purpose or?
Yeah, I actually, I pulled it.
It was interesting.
Available for 10 years. And right before my first single came out for my last record, I was like, I had always been kind of annoyed by that record. And
I heard you mention that. Yeah.
But so I pulled it. And now, and then recently I've kind of thought, well, it was kind of an egotistical thing to do, like, you know, like, as opposed to just accepting like myself in each stage of my artistic life. And I've recently regretted that I did that because it's the first record that I ever put out.
Yeah.
So I feel like now that I've been doing all of this, it's been over a decade. I just feel like a little bit wiser.
Yeah. I can imagine. I got into the same headspace. I started this podcast in 2020 and it took a while for things to get going where I found a rhythm and like a sort of a formula that I wanted for each episode. And I was like, I need to go delete the early episodes. They just were terrible. But yeah, sometimes you just have to live with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can understand that. And I think it's kind of a hard thing to figure out, right? Because it's kind of nice to go back later and to like be grateful that for that part of yourself that had the guts to do something that you wanted to do, right?
Yeah.
And it's almost, I think taking something down like an album to me, it sort of feels like almost like being ashamed of something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I remember thinking I was worried that my new fans would be like, "What is this crappy album she put out? It doesn't sound anything like what, you know? That's sort of like, yeah. So you wanted to talk about that one first then.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting mind frame that you have for that album, and I was very curious about the behind the scenes feelings about why you felt that way. But yeah, I thought it'd be great to kind of comb through each record, talking about the emotional aspects or perspective that you were in when you created that, leading up to creating that work, the professional perspective at the time, you know, where work life was at the time for you, how you were making ends meet, was music full time, or, you know, how you were kind of piecing things together. And then the practical aspect of things, which is the process of writing the songs. How did that come about? What were the influences of the songs that ended up becoming the body of work? How did recording the album come about? The struggles or the great aspects of that? So I thought it'd be nice to jump into like each album, and then we'll lead up to your up and coming album, New Girl, is it?
Yeah, new girl.
Okay. So yeah, let's kind of jump into When I Was Yours and kind of talk about that emotional space you were in at the time, leading to that album.
My emotional space. When I Was Yours, came out in 2009, just a year after my divorce. I had been married in my for all of my 20s, basically, and I wasn't really able to pursue music because the marriage that I was in was very kind of dominating. And even when I tried to do music, I just wasn't in a relationship where I could really be my authentic self, basically. And so When I Was Yours was like, we got a divorce, it was an amicable split, and then it was like all of a sudden it was just like I literally felt like I was being dug out of the grave. And I was given a second chance at life. And because I felt like I had to stay in that marriage, and because of a lot of old constructs that I had grown up with. And anyway, so my emotional space was like, I was so happy. I was so happy to be making this music and finally just getting to be myself. I was playing music as much as I possibly could, live. I had a year-long residency that I was playing in Los Angeles, and everyone I was meeting, I was just so happy and joyful to be just be doing what I felt I had been prevented to do, which was just be myself. And that was like the forefront of all of that, but I think later came like the aftershock of like I just got a divorce and I never figured out how to be an adult because I got married so young that it was like developmentally I was still like 19 in a lot of ways, and I was now like 32 or 33, and I was like, oh my God, I have to figure out how to take care of myself. Like, I literally took my divorce settlement and made a record with it. That's how I was like, not, I was like, I had no realistic expectation or worries about like, life. Like, I was a Starbucks barista for like 8 years in my 20s, like helping with my husband's career. He had become a director, and we made music videos, and so I did wardrobe for music videos, and I was a barista. And ever since I had become an adult, I hadn't really had to worry about like paying bills so much because I was married to somebody who was very like, I want to take care of everything, which didn't really help me. And I had to figure out later, like, how do
The
I do
hard
this
way.
thing? So I look back on that time and I just really think like, oh my God, like, oh, I love Jamie Drake so much. Poor Jamie Drake. She was like, had all of this, She had no idea that reality was just going to smack her in the face. But I really figured it out though. It's like I had like enough. The marriage that I was in, I was so depressed in it, and I was not able to really be myself, that I really had this sense of, like, after the divorce, I really had this sense of, I have to do music no matter what. Because I felt like I had been dead for a decade.
Right.
And that's no way to live. So I was like, I have to do music no matter what. So I knew it took this major catalyst in destruction to like realize that I really, to realize what my purpose here on earth was.
Yeah.
And that I had to just do it no matter what, which is why, even though after I put out that record, I was still pursuing music, even though I wasn't really making money doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I was yours, a lot of those songs I had written already and I had just never had anything produced ever in my life. And that was an interesting experience. Like, I felt like I'd sort of been taken advantage of by the producer because he knew I was getting a divorce, and it's like weird, kind of weird situations. Just
so you life spent a lot of time writing music without ever really performing it or, you know, recording it.
Yeah. Oh, like, wow. I learned how to play guitar when I was 17, and my dad had actually been a songwriter, but he had never pursued it in a real way. It was just more of a hobby for him.
Yeah.
And he wasn't really in my life after the first grade because my mom got remarried and all this stuff. So I feel like I got that bug from him, and I also had this feeling of like, I need to carry this torch, or I need to prove something in a way. He also passed away when I was in my early 20s. So he's always been sort of this like character in my life that's like, wow, my dad, I feel like I'm a lot like my dad, but he was never in my life. So he's like this mysterious figure that I felt like I might have had a lot in common with and whatever. I can't remember what I was saying before that, but yeah, I started writing when I was 17, when I learned to play guitar. And I moved to New York City to go to musical theater school, after high school. and I had my first, like manager who was like interested in working with me when I was like 19 or something. And that was like interesting because the way that we met was because I was helping with the worship at this church.
Oh, wow.
In the East Village.
That's so interesting.
I know. I'm like,
the
I was
last actually, place you would
I know.
Think to find but, a manager.
I know. Yeah. He used to be, he was a model agent or something for four models.
Okay.
And he just saw talent and was like this new believer and wanted to like help me in some way, you know?
Yeah.
So his thought was like, well, let's take you to Nashville and let's take you to some Christian labels.
Interesting. Was that the kind of music you were making at the time, or was that just his?
No, I think it was, but I think that was kind of a common misconception when I was growing up. Even when I was a teenager, I felt like, I remember feeling confused because I wasn't writing worship music. I wasn't writing Jesus songs. I was just writing about life. I was writing about my experiences. And so, you know, I remember as a teenager being like, what's wrong with me? Why am I not writing Jesus songs?
Right.
So, anyway, he took me to some Christian labels and I played for a few Christian labels. And the last one that we went to, the label owner looked at me and he was like, you don't want this. He's like, you actually have a gift. And I don't think this is for you.
Wow.
And I looked at him and I was like, you're right. And, you know, a lot of, but then what I ended up doing is I met, not that much later, I met and ended up marrying a youth pastor, because this was, it was like this paradigm that I had grown up of, yeah, like, get married and, you know, get married young and don't have sex before you're married. Otherwise you're going to hell. Like, yeah, it's crazy when I think of it now, like that, that's like the programming that I was raised in, but it really, really affected my emotional and mental state in a huge way. And so much to the point where I like literally married somebody that I kind of didn't like because he was like a good looking Christian guy. It's like so weird. Yeah,
but yeah, it makes sense that you're young. I'm sure when you're in that space, I think it's like everyone else is kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, all my friends, the right time.
All my friends were getting married and, and I was like, am I taking crazy pills? Like, we're still like growing up here, right?
Yeah.
And then I found myself in the same situation. So anyway, yeah, I mean, so all through that marriage, it was like, and it was never right. Which is, it's like sad when I think of that now. It's like, man, I wish Jamie could have, you know, I wish Jamie had given more tools for life. Cause like, you know, her parents hadn't really set me up for success.
Yeah.
But I've done that for myself now, thankfully.
Sure.
So yeah, I'd been writing since I was 17. So some of the material on that first album was like, you know, there were a couple songs that were like maybe 5 or 6 years old, something like that, you know, because typically a lot of people will like write an album and then put that album out, you know, like in the same kind of season. But since it was my first record, it was like all of this material that had sort of been sitting around for a bit. So there's definitely some really good songs on there though, you know, like I think I'm probably going to re-release some of them in the future because I really would like to do one of my next albums. I want to do like a country record. I think that would be fun.
Interesting. I love that you're not boxing yourself in as an artist in a specific genre. You have this sound that's like, I'm not a music aficionado. I don't know music to that degree. But when I listen to your music, I get a lot of Frenchy vibes. I get a lot of obviously the folk. I listen to a lot of Brooke Fraser, Feist, and I get your music takes me into that kind of world. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Kings of Convenience. So like just get a lot of those like feelings, and it's beautiful stuff.
Thank you.
Of course. But yeah, so that's the emotional aspect, where you were, and a lot of the things you were experiencing at that time influenced a lot of the, I guess from 17 onward, influenced a lot of the, you know, things you were experiencing at that time, fed into the songs that became the album. What was your work life at the time, leading up to the album coming together? What was the work-life balance?
All throughout my 20s, I was a shift supervisor at Starbucks. And I was also a wardrobe stylist for our music video company. And so it's kind of this interesting thing because I had sort of this old-fashioned idea of, oh, I'm going to help my husband with his dreams and then it'll be my turn later or something
like that.
And so I had finally quit Starbucks and then we moved to Los Angeles because at the time we were living in Thousand Oaks, we lived there for 7 years and I call those my desert years because we got met and got married in New York City when I was like barely 21.
Yeah.
We moved to the suburbs of Los Angeles with the intention of moving to San Francisco and we never did. It's kind of weird. But my work life, I was newly divorced. It was funny because I finally got to quit Starbucks and I started going back to like college and taking coursework and different things I was interested in. And I didn't have to work, but it was only like a year or so of that. And then we got a divorce. So it was like, oh my gosh. I didn't want to do wardrobe anymore, although I could have if I would have, you know, pursued that. It just reminded me of like all of the work that I put into my ex's career. And, you know, so for a while I was just like, I'm not going to work. I'm going to make music and I'm going to play music and all of that stuff. And then eventually it really snuck up on me when I realized, oh my God, I have to find a job.
Unfortunately, you have to make a living as an artist.
Yeah, I was like, I worked so hard in my 20s and got to this point where, and I was used to being someone's wife and used to having two incomes. And at one point we started doing really well with the videos and the last few years of our marriage. So it was like, we were both sort of like, oh my gosh, we have money. Like we had both been raised really poor. So it was like, you know, I was like, I finally get to enjoy a certain kind of life as a wife, you know? And then it was like, then I got a divorce and it was the best thing. But also on the outside, it was really hard because I had to, because I did spend most of my divorce money on my record. And I didn't know how to save. I didn't know how to pay my bills. Like literally those were all things that my ex-husband wanted to do. Yeah. Like he liked to pay the bills and take care of all of that stuff. So I just had never learned how to do it. And, so that was a rough time. But I was still young, so I was very, like, I had a lot of, like, pep, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And for about 9 months, I had to live with, I call her my California mom, you know? I met this couple when we had first moved to California. I met this couple from South Africa who he had already had, you know, a previous, like, relationship with. And we had stayed with them when we first moved there. And she just became like a wonderful mentor in my life and was a family counselor and actually counseled me through a lot of my childhood stuff. And she's definitely an angel in my life.
Yeah.
So they were just like, come stay with us until you figure out what you need to do. So they let me live with them for like 9 months until I got on my feet and basically, you know, fell ass backwards into a bartending job in downtown LA, you know? And it, for me, it just felt like it felt so crappy to have to, after everything I had already been through, it felt so crappy. And like, I just felt like a big loser basically. But it wasn't my fault. No one had prepared me for the world. And, you know, then I was married to somebody who was very overbearing and kind of kept me in the sheltered place. So what was I going to do other than like basically just figure out how to grow up when I was like 30?
Yeah.
And I know I'm not the only person out there that can relate to that, you know? unfortunately, I didn't go to college or get some kind of a fallback degree, although I know people say it doesn't really matter these days,
but yeah,
not like I could just go become like a preschool teacher without.
That's actually something I was going to ask you. Like, it seems like there was no plan B, like music had to work out.
Yeah, it's still plan A.
I love that. I mean, I know how much of a risk and eggs in one basket that is, but that you put a lot of money into your first record that I imagine you self-released. How did that, I guess this will go into the practical side of things. Like, how was that released? How was that recorded, released? Walk me through that process.
Well, I was still very much a part of like the Christian, like the evangelical world at that point. And when I was a teenager, my favorite worship band was, I sound like such a nerd. My favorite worship band was called Sonic Flood.
Interesting.
And
I thought I would know them. My favorite was when I was a teenager, Hillsong.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. I think that's some good stuff. So I serendipitously met one of the, you know, members of that band who was like producing records and stuff, and like it was such a God thing, you know.
Nice. Yeah.
And was like, you know, and I think he was used to making records that were a lot more expensive as well, you know. So not to throw him under the bus, but I mean, you can make a lot less expensive stuff these days. And and that album was like, I don't want to say it was like, it's not like the record was like 50 grand or something, but it was like almost 20 grand, you know, which was like pretty much all the money I had.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yes, that was good.
Right.
I'm gonna be fine. and I was fine, you know, but like looking back on it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
But yeah, so your question was,
the more practical end of things, the recording of the album, the releasing of the album, how that process came about.
Yeah, so the recording of the album, you know, it was my first time working with a producer, so I kind of just trusted him. And the whole process felt magical at the time, just because everything was so new to me. So I didn't really have an idea of what aesthetic I wanted to bring to the table.
Mm.
And I just kind of let him go with it. And I also didn't really feel like he was open to me having an opinion about stuff either. Mm. It's sort of like, he's the producer and he's going to, you know, kind of do his take on my songs. And I know that some producers work that way, but after having that experience and, you know, kind of coming away with it, sort of kind of hating a lot of the record, it was recorded well, but I think I had to have that experience in order to know that I didn't like it. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I think sometimes you have to hate an experience and learn, oh, this is what I don't want, in order to get to the point where you know exactly what it is you want.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it was like, that experience was like, it was expensive and I didn't feel like I was really a part of it as much as who I really am likes to be a part of that experience.
Yeah.
And I didn't really have an idea of what I wanted. I think if I had had a better idea and had given him more references and stuff like that, maybe he would have been able to do a better job for me as well, you know? So I think I kind of see that as like part of that. It is my own naivete, like that I brought to the experience. The recording of it. Yeah, and I remember it taking forever to get mixes done, and it was kind of it was stressful because it was like I wanted to move on with my life. And there was some drama getting everything done finally at one point, and weirdly, I feel like he sort of felt like he should have gotten paid more somehow. I think he just had come from this like Christian music industry.
Yeah.
Where he was used to making lots of dough, and it was like, to him, my money was like not enough money. And for me, it was like, that's a lot of money. And so, practically like that was like the experience. And then the experience of putting it out, like another cool thing that had happened is that I don't remember how we met, but, do you remember Pledge Music?
No.
It's not really around anymore, but it it started at the same time as Kickstarter and like all
Gotcha.
of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so Pledge Music and Kickstarter were sort of like the first few years of that whole thing. It was like they were like run like nose to nose with like, are you going to do a pledge campaign or a Kickstarter, whatever.
Right.
And I got to be Pledge Music. I was a Pledge Music kind of, I was going to say hamster. I was a Pledge Music guinea pig.
Gotcha.
I did a campaign with them, and it was kind of a cool experience, but it was also stressful. It was like my first time ever doing like a crowdfunding thing,
Right.
which I'm currently doing right now, and I'm also like just reminded about I would do this differently if I ever did this again, because yeah, anyway. So I did like a little crowdfunding thing, and it was a new thing at the time to do a crowdfunding thing. So people got really excited, and my album release show was just an amazing experience. And I came out of that really thinking that something big was going to happen. And it didn't.
Wow.
And I, you know, and I had so much like being a solo artist is it's so hard because if you're a band, you have like, you know, more than one person kind of making all the decisions.
Yeah.
But then you also have to deal with the fact that I've been in bands before, and I'd kind of rather, unless it's the right people, I'd rather be doing this by myself. But being a solo artist is really hard because, you know, unless you have enough capital to hire a band to play with you all the time, you're gonna do
Right.
stuff solo.
Wow.
And I remember people always asking, "Are you gonna have a band at your show?"
Oh my God, the things you
And
don't
it's
even think
like,
about.
let me see. I'm the one promoting it, and I'm gonna walk away with like negative money because I'm gonna have to pay the band and like make nothing for
Yeah.
myself. So it's kind of being a solo artist can definitely be a grind, and I think I got really used to like doing a lot of solo shows, and part of that too is because I had trust issues.
I'm sure there's also like a bit of a perfectionism thing
Yeah.
that goes into that, where, you know, unless everyone's been vetted and to your level of kind of standard, it's hard to kind of like give up the reins to like somebody else to like carry for
Yeah.
you.
I mean, to be honest, it's taken this long for me to meet someone. I mean, it's funny because we've known each other this whole time, but we finally, like last summer when I was back in LA for a little bit, just got together and was like, dude, do you want to just jam? And I think because everyone was still locking themselves inside, it was like
Yeah.
an opportunity to have like a real musical moment with somebody. Whereas in LA and in cities like LA and New York and Nashville, I'm sure it's like people don't really, a lot of artists don't just like get together collectively and enjoy what they do together. It's like
Right.
there always has to be some kind of a reason for it, or money or whatever. Because the reality is, it's expensive to live in the city,
Yeah.
and everyone has to make a living. So I think that what I was always wanting to create was some kind of a community or something, where it's like, because I mean, like I like showing up to things and just singing backgrounds, and I'm not
Yeah.
expecting like, you know, but I feel like maybe that's more of a European sensibility or something than in America. We're so obsessed with making money and becoming this and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm getting off track here.
No, you're good. I guess we can just jump into your second record, which is Everything Is Fine, which to me is like a 10 out of 10 experience. And I'm not just saying that because you're talking to me. I played it literally on repeat for days when I first listened to it.
Aww.
Yeah. So
Same.
I feel like this is probably, well, there's a 10-year gap between your first record and your second record. So clearly there's a lot that happened between that time frame. Yeah. So we can go into the emotional mind state leading up to the album again, and the professional and practical ends.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, there was a 10-year gap because after I put out my first solo album, I felt like I wanted to put the brakes on because I needed to figure out who I was as an artist, or how I wanted to step out sonically. And I remember thinking that I was a little bit confused because I could write so many different kinds of songs, but I didn't know which box to put myself in. And so a big part of that process for me, it was almost like I went into a science lab and I was like, okay, let's try this one and then this one and then this one. And what I actually did is I was a part of a few different bands.
Yeah.
And the first one was a recording, ended up just being a recording project called The Bitter Branches, and we never released that officially. And then the second one was actually AJ, my producer from Everything's Fine.
Yeah.
We met and we made an EP together called Nobel. And through the process of recording, learning how to produce that ourselves, because I remember telling him, I was like, I spent this much money on my album. It's expensive to make a record. And he was just like, we're going to do it ourselves. Oh. And he literally like YouTubed everything and learned
how to
like engineer and a mixer. And I mean, the record took us 4 years because, you know, part of the reason was because I was a part of other projects as well. But
yeah,
it took us, oh my gosh, Nobel took 4 years too, 3 or 4 years. And after Nobel, we started making Everything's Fine. So there was a period in there in my mid-30s where I was just like busy with so many music projects. I was a part of a duo and we would play shows together. We never made a record. I was a part of a Americana trio called Dear Lemon Trees.
Mm.
For 2 years, and that was really stressful. So I just felt like I was like continually putting all of these different hats on and trying to figure out like, how do I want to step out? And then meanwhile, we had figured out like a recording sort of not template, but AJ and I had worked together for like 4 years at that point. So when we started making Everything's Fine together, we already had like a total just flow going with the way that we liked to do things.
Yeah.
We had a similar sensibility that we were looking for. And we just kind of applied those to the songs that I had written as opposed to songs that we co-wrote together, like the EP that we did with Nobel.
Yeah.
And the process took a long time because I was overcommitted in so many different ways. Like, I thought that the trio thing was going to be like more successful or something. And so
right.
I was letting that take over more of my time. And then come to find out, it was just kind of a toxic environment. And it was like the most stressful 2 years of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to be in a band, like, really know who you're dealing with, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so during that, literally it was a 10-year span between my two solo albums, and in that decade, I was just doing all of those things and still working at a restaurant. I was bartending for a while. Then I was waitressing and I cleaned a house in Beechwood Canyon once a week. I was like, I don't care.
Doing
like,
all the things to find the artistic and creative projects.
Yeah, and I literally, like, I remember 2017 was a year where I was just like, I have dialed in. I have mastered being the, you know, the artist. That's like only working 3 days a week and doing art every other day.
Yeah.
Like, I work at this restaurant 2 days a week, I clean a house, and then that's all I have to do.
Yeah.
And I was signed up for all of the low income programs, you know, and I was just like, I had mastered like the artist's life.
That balance that's very needed.
Yeah. And also, it was just sort of like, I think one of the things that has kept me going just in the person that I am or was made to be naturally is just like hopeful. And even if it doesn't make sense, and then also kind of stubborn too, because I'm just like, I had the experience of, I just never wanted to like have to go back to doing something that I hated.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm in a place now where with everything's fine. That was just really, it was such a beautiful experience to get to this place where it was like all this hard work that I had done. It took me like 7 years to get to a place where, I don't have to have a side job anymore. And I had the manager and the agent and the label and the lawyer and, the sync company and the publishing deal. And it was like, whoa, it's like, and I, there was a lot of lessons that, that I got from that as well. Especially since it's like, Everything's Fine came out in September of 2019, you know? So it was like, I was on this slow, steady, like rolling the boulder up the mountain
for
7 years. And then I'm like, I got the whole team. We're at the top of the mountain. Like, I literally was like, I'm on the top of the mountain, you know?
Yeah.
And then COVID came along. And so,
oh my God, right.
It was just like, that was definitely not something I saw coming, you know?
Oh my God.
No one did.
Well, I have a few questions. So how did the label and publishing deal come about?
I attracted my first manager in the fall of 2017 and we started working together. And the first thing she took me to was a Folk Alliance festival or Folk Alliance thing. And I did three or four showcases. And in one of those showcase rooms, it felt like magical that in that particular showcase, because it felt like there was like almost like this heavy dew that had just set in. And after the performance, all of these people were interested in working with me. So it was like I came out of this one thing with like a few different people wanting to be my booking agent and a lawyer and different opportunities. And then also there was a woman from Spotify who was like, oh my God, I love your music so much. Please tell me when you're releasing this because I want to put it on my, on the playlists. And the album wasn't coming out for another 6 months or so, or the first single.
Yeah.
And so my manager and I were just like, oh my God, I hope she actually keeps her word. Right. Like 6 months from now, like she might totally forget about me.
Yeah.
And when Everything's Fine came out, I remember looking at my Spotify app or whatever, and like about 5 days after that single came out, I looked down at my phone and it had gone from like 200 streams to 6,000 streams.
Wow.
In one night. And I was like, oh my God, what? Mm. And the same thing happened like every day. It was like, it went up to like 10,000 streams a day for a while. And I was just like, oh my God, like literally for When I Was Yours, it was on Spotify for 10 years.
Yeah.
And it had 10,000 streams in the 10 years it was there. And like in one night I was getting 10,000 streams. So I was just like, what the fuck? Like,
wow.
Insane. So, so it was amazing because I think everyone has such a different journey because, you know, for me it was like, a lot of people hate Spotify, and I get it, but also like they just happen to be like one of the vehicles that has kind of helped my career in a way, because it's exposed my music all over the world. And so basically it was amazing to have Spotify on my side. It was a huge, huge blessing. And the first two singles that came out, they, you know, were putting on their playlists and stuff. And then that's what attracted the label, because they were like, who's this new artist that's getting all these playlists and streams and stuff?
Yeah.
And they wanted to sign me, you know, based on that, because their model happens to be, you know, the whole streaming thing, you know?
Gotcha.
So it's kind of funny because I already had that going for me before I had my label. And now, like, years later, I'm like, I wonder what would have happened if I would have just been like, no, I'm going to stay independent and I'll just make this for myself instead
of
having it go directly to my label.
Interesting.
So the label, Anti-Fragile, has been a great label to work with. You know, everyone has their own. I've heard some really awful stories about artists being stuck in different deals and stuff. And
yeah,
they're great in the sense that they don't own my masters. And, you know, if I get licensing or stuff, they don't take any of my publishing. And
yeah,
so it's a good deal, but at the same time, it's like, I'm still recouping a lot of funds for everything that they've put into both of these records. So
yeah,
I was just talking to a friend about this actually. I was just like, hindsight's 2020, you know, I was about ready to recoup from my first record. And now because I made this new record, they've just lumped all of that into the new record. So it's sort of this thing where it's like, should I have just gotten a loan from the bank and like paid for some stuff myself instead of owing somebody else something? But
yeah.
It is what it is.
This is a part of the business, music industry business, that I don't know about, but I'm very curious about. But maybe I'll save that for another time. That's like the more nitty gritty aspect stuff of things. Yeah. I love the kind of behind the scenes, behind the curtains view of what led to Everything's Fine. And some of the subject matter on the album, what was the inspiration behind a lot of the work, and how different was this from that first project? Why did this feel, well, I think you've expressed that a lot of people were just in a place for it to feel like things were clicking. You found your sound. How does one find one sound? I mean, how did you discover that this was your sound?
Well, I mean, that process of making the Nobel EP with AJ was a really big part of that. And then when that took 4 years, and then it was sort of like we had almost like a template that we could.
Yeah.
I don't want to say template, but we had a sensibility, a musical sensibility and language together that was really easy at that point. So once we started recording my songs for Everything's Fine, it was really, it was a pretty smooth process with each song, even though it took a really long time.
Yeah.
It was a pretty smooth process just with figuring out how we wanted to do things.
Yeah.
But also it was cool because it was my record and there were my songs and stuff that I got to veto things that I didn't want to do, you know, like if it was sounding too Belle and Sebastian-y, I was just like, no, that's more of a Nobel vibe. Like I want it to have more of a folk key thing to it, but a purity as well. And I want people to feel that sense of hope and joy when they listen to the music.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel like that production kind of style that we developed together really lent itself to that in such a beautiful way for that album.
Yeah, it definitely feels hopeful. I think a lot of it feels somber, but very, yeah, there's a, I mean, I think for me, I listened to it when I was going through a very emotional period of my life. And it was like this perfect soundtrack to like everything that was going on, because it was like, everything is fine. So it was a really great
COVID
soundtrack.
Or was it like, was it because
it was at the beginning of COVID, but also the beginning of a breakup. And I was just like, this is literally the soundtrack that I need.
Oh my God.
So good. But you came through.
See, that's the beautiful thing that I could have never predicted.
Yeah.
Like, with Everything's Fine. See, because for me, like, I really do feel like I'm here to create music that helps people heal. Mm-hmm. And, like, heal, like, the child within, I think. And my ego would certainly like for me to have more like worldly success and like more money in the bank. And it'd feel great if I was like doing big tours and stuff like that. You know, I'm like, I'm human. I'm like other people in the world that like to see things happening in their career. But when COVID happened and everything was put on hold, it actually did take me almost a year for it to hit me that, like, wow. I remember when a whole year had passed since I put the record out, where that's when it finally kind of hit me that, like, wow, this is really depressing. Like, I spent so much of my life building up to this point, and then it felt like it was kind of taken away. But meanwhile, every day I literally had like hundreds of people like writing to me on social media and telling me that my music was helping them get through the worst event ever in our history. And I was just like, wow, okay, actually I have to sit back and be grateful that I'm like somehow this person who's had this much of an effect on people's healing.
Yeah.
And it falls in line with what my heart really wants to be doing.
Yeah. No, that's good. I mean, I know it's, I have a few musicians as friends who were bummed about COVID happening as well, because it was like a major slump in, they'd released an album a couple months prior, and then COVID hit and they couldn't do anything with the album. It's tough, I'm sure. I mean, how did you navigate that, the aspect of putting music out and not being able to, I imagine, tour with it?
Yeah, the tours were canceled.
Yeah.
And I mean, what ended up happening with me is like my higher power ended up taking me on this really adventurous journey. Like I felt like I was picked up and taken out of the city. Mm-hmm. And actually when I spoke with Andy, it was at the beginning of COVID, because I remember when we recorded that episode, I was living in this Airstream in Upper Ojai in California. And it's interesting. It's kind of full circle to be having another talking to you now.
Yeah.
Thinking about that time and thinking about that record coming out, especially since I'm putting out New Girl this Friday.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, I'm like a little bit like, whoa, this is a cool moment. How do I express how I'm feeling right now? But, and also what was my point? when I talked to Andy, I was still very like in this optimistic place.
Yes.
Because hadn't really gotten punched in the face yet because
Gotcha.
it had only been maybe 5 or 6 months since the release, and it was still early days, and we didn't know this was going to last like 2 years.
Yeah.
And artists were going to be like put on hold for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, everything's fine. Yeah, it's funny because that song is kind of, I wrote that song, it was inspired by my different relationships that I've been in, but I think the biggest one was the guy that I was married to, you know, for 8 years.
Yeah.
Like, I was remembering what it felt like to be in a relationship, knowing that it wasn't right, but wanting to pretend everything was fine and hoping that everything would just be fine the next day magically, you know?
Yeah.
But it's funny though. It's funny that that song is actually more depressing than it feels, you know, like, I feel like, and I'm glad about that because I'm glad that I think when people listen to music, they get like the message that they're needing to receive.
Yes.
You know, or that they're looking to receive. And, I think it later on, it kind of hit me like, oh yeah, this can be more of a positive thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of the songs on that record have to do with, you know, relationships and getting my heart broken, but also, you know, getting my heart broken over like the experience of losing like faith in God and what does all of that look like? And the confusion of that and like wanting to hang on to certain aspects and being okay with having questions and doubts and being okay with still holding on to God and like, you know, being like, well, you've always been in my life, so you might as well just stay here and in some way.
I think it's interesting you mentioned that, you know, you have dreams of a successful career, and I think it's interesting because like in ways it feels like Everything Is Fine was your debut album. Right. So I mean, I feel like there's still time for, you know, I think your name is slowly becoming like a household name, or at least from my perspective, I think so.
Thank you.
Especially in like a genre that's like so kind of niche. Again, I'm not, I'm no music expert, so you know more about the space in which you're in. But yeah, I think, you're definitely at the very beginnings of this like wonderful growth. And, you know, with your new album coming out, I guess we can talk about that now. What's gone into that? A much shorter period has passed between Everything's Fine and this one. So was that just the COVID inspiration period where people were doing a lot of things in a very short span of time?
Well, COVID played a huge role just in that. I'm just going to look at the song list.
Yeah.
COVID obviously played a huge role because that was my reality during this time span in between the two records.
Yeah.
A really huge thing that I experienced during COVID was I discovered the ACA program, which is an acronym for Adult Children of Alcoholics and Dysfunctional Families. And it's basically a 12-step recovery program for people that grew up in dysfunctional families. And it's sort of thought of as the graduation program for all 12-step. So, you know, if you're an AA or you're an Al-Anon or SLA or whatever, all of the different programs, like basically ACA is like a foundation for all of those, which was very surprising for me to discover because I'd never heard of it in my entire life.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing that I got from kind of just discovering it serendipitously, while living in Ojai, I moved into this house in Miners Oaks, and I'm coming up on 2 years now because it was July of that year of 2020. Yeah. And the woman I was living with had a friend over, and they were talking about their narcissistic mothers. And I was like, oh, that sounds familiar. sorry, Mom. And they told me about the program, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's so interesting. Mm. And because I had literally nothing else going on, I just was curious, and I attended some of the meetings, and then I'd also happened to be in a relationship with somebody for just a few weeks, and yeah. It was one of those situations where this person had totally given me the wrong impression. And I fell so hard, and my heart got broken, and it was like a perfect storm of heartbreak and all of the crap from my childhood basically was brought to the surface because I once again had found myself in this situation where I fell in love with the wrong person, and it felt like a rock bottom kind of experience for me. So ACA was truly this godsend, and I was going to five meetings a week, and I got a sponsor, and I was doing the steps and going on hikes every day and crying in the river and writing in my journal, smoking a lot of weed. It's not necessarily an ACA thing, but I was microdosing basically because it was COVID, and I was like, this is awful. Mm. After I hit that year mark of my record's been out for a year, I had sort of this general depression kind of set in, and that was really hard to go through on top of the heartbreak thing. So ACA basically saved my life in so many ways because I was able to really connect with my own inner child, which is interesting because I feel like I'm supposed to help other people connect with their inner child. And literally, I have kids songs too, and I love interacting with children as well. So this is a whole other part of who I am on the inside that needed to sort of be untapped so that I could heal more myself.
Yeah.
And then when the timing was right, I ended up going on a random co-write that my friend from a mutual friend. Last May, I was back in Los Angeles for a minute, and my friend from Nashville randomly texted me and said, hey, if you're in LA right now, you should write with Rich Jacks. And I was like, okay. And I didn't do any research or anything, so I didn't know he was a producer. I didn't know he was a Grammy Award winning producer.
Oh my God.
I was just like, okay.
All right.
And then I met him, and we wrote this song called It's a New Life.
Mm-hmm.
And when we wrote this song, I was like, oh my God, this is the world of my next record.
Mm.
Because it had this bossa nova kind of feeling to it.
Mm.
But it was still me. And I remember talking with him for almost 2 hours before we started writing. And I was just sharing about how I didn't know who my next producer would be because it took me so long to trust my last one, but I knew that I needed to work with someone else. And then he shared that he was a producer and that he had gotten this Grammy for this other record, but he wished that he had gotten it for something else. And I couldn't tell you who it was for actually right now. So, but the bossa nova thing was really cool because all throughout COVID, I discovered, Zhao Gilberto and Stan Getz have this live album called 76.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been out. It's way older than I am. And And I discovered it and I was listening to it literally every day. I bought a bicycle and I was riding around with my dog in the basket and a JBL speaker. And I was listening to 76 literally every single day because it made me feel good. You know, like this bossa music was like, this is the flavor of music that I need for me to get through this pandemic, you know?
Yeah.
And so then when I wrote this song, like a year and a half later with Rich, I was just immediately like floored because this bossa vibe had made its way into my music now.
Yeah.
It's like a really cool thing. Very serendipitous. And so then after that, I just knew that he was going to be my next producer, which was amazing. And then at that point it was like, okay, well, here's all my demos. And we went through, he listened to a bunch of my demos and then, you know, we kind of figured out like the main songs for this next record.
Yeah.
And I ended up doing a couple of co-writes as well that made it onto the album. I did one with Rich and my friend Justin Tam from Nashville. We wrote a tune called Lifted by Love. And then also when I was in Nashville, I met with Carolyn Spence and we wrote Easy Target together. That was just a month before I started making the album. So it was really interesting because this record came together so much quicker than my last one. We recorded it in 2 weeks.
Wow.
I mean, instead of 4 years, it was two.
Yeah.
And also, in the middle of making this new album, I had a conversation with Rich, and I was just expressing how the experience of making New Girl, I felt like my heart was so much more open.
Yeah.
As a person, and he as a producer really wouldn't let me get away with not opening, not being vulnerable.
In your writing.
In my performances when I would sing.
Yeah.
But he was very subtle. He wasn't weird in any way. It was like he just knew how to get me to take the right approach for something.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, too, is like I only did a few takes for each of the songs.
Wow.
And most of the songs are like single takes as well, which is also something I really wanted to do because when I made Everything's Fine, we did so many takes and did all the copy pasting with the vocals. And like it was a much more of a pop production in that sense. Yeah. And New Girl was like way more of a kind of like a 1970s experience where it was like, I'm going to record one vocal take and we're going to take the best one, the one that feels the right way.
Yeah.
And we weren't trying to like make everything perfect. And on Everything's Fine, I feel like now when I look back on that record, I'm like, that was me then. And this is me now. Yeah. And then I was a lot more cerebral.
Right, and
I feel like everything's fine is a lot more cerebral, but also AJ is like a very cerebral person as well.
Right.
So it's an interesting thing to think about, you know,
how
all these people and then how our art reflects who we are.
Yeah. I'm sure that was what was needed as well at the time, you know, coming out of something, a project that you weren't like crazy about, to want to nail something just as you really, truly wanted it.
Yeah. Because Everything's Fine in a lot of ways is like, it, you know, like you said, I was thinking of it as like, this is how I want to step out.
Yeah.
You know, for so many years, I felt like I stepped out wrong.
Yeah.
Yours was not right.
Yeah.
And then I took it down because I was worried about what people thought. Now I'm like, maybe I would have gotten people to listen to that old album and actually like made some album streams.
Yeah.
That would have been a terrible thing.
That could be still be a thing. Who knows?
Yeah, right.
I hate to wrap up, but this was really good. It was really, really good to get a sense of behind the scenes of, you know, all of your works. And What are you excited about for this new project?
I'm excited to have a new album out there that reflects who I am today, and to do some touring and to actually feel people's energy in person again, because I've played a bit here and there, but I think having a new album out and then getting to celebrate that with shows, it just feels, there's something really special about that.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. And I'm hoping that the world doesn't shut down again.
Yeah, let's hope not.
Like, can we please?
Not two times in a row. No, thank you.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm looking forward to listening to the album. I'm looking forward to sharing it. I think it's a really wonderful world you're building. And I look forward to a country album from you. That'd be exciting.
Yeah, I don't know when it'll happen, but we'll see. We'll see.
Awesome. All right, folks. That's it for this episode. If you like this topic and want more like it, leave us your feedback on our review page or send all of your questions to the email linked in the show notes. Catch you next time.